Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast, a conversation that changes the way you view all relationships, whether married, single, parent, or professional. Discover the relationship secret hidden in plain sight. And now the intersection of theology and psychology. Conversations between pastor
and psychologist.
They are father and son. Your hosts, Emerson and Jonathan Egerich.
Are you ready?
Here we go.
Welcome to the Love and Respect Podcast. I'm Jonathan Egerich, joined here by my father, Emerson Egerich. This is episode 84, titled, God Joined You Together, What Does This Mean? If you haven't had a chance to check out last week's episode, episode 83, that one was titled, What is the Issue When the Issue Isn't the Issue? When we looked at two examples of a wife having a new baby and a husband kind of having a disagreement over his spending habits and how his wife views that. Certainly appreciated those of you that have listened to it already, shared it with others, given us feedback. We also encourage you, of those of you that haven't listened to it, to go back and check it out and all the preceding 82 episodes before that, which you can find at loveandrespectpodcast.com, loveandrespect.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can find podcasts. Feeds. Just a quick reminder, as I've mentioned each week for the past few weeks, please head on over and check out our new e-store. We're going to be adding some new products here in the next few months and trying to put together some packages and bundles, but to allow people to give gifts to others more easily. Also, just wanted to mention, my dad's got a new book called Mother and Son, The Respect Effect, that's coming out in April. And as we mentioned at the end of last week's episode, we have been told by the publisher, and we're certainly appreciative of those of you that are willing to do this, who are interested in this topic, that pre-orders really help on places like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, even maybe getting to the New York Times. So pre-release sales do help, and we'd be honored if you were going to purchase it anyway to consider doing that ahead of time. And you can do that at loveandrespect.com inside of our store. Four pre-order links to different places are in there to do so. Additionally, he'll be doing a simulcast with churches all over the country at the beginning of May on this topic. So stay tuned for more information on that. Did you want to add anything, Dad, before we head into today's topic?
No, that's great. On the simulcast, if those who are listening know leaders in their local church or they are leaders, we would love for you to consider, you only, you know, have to have, what, 15, 20 people in your church be in the simulcast. And usually churches have that technological accessibility now. And so please consider the mother-son simulcast that will be coming May 4th.
And I actually think that's going to be the URL to find out information about that, motherandsonsimulcast.com, motherandsonsimulcast.com. So you should be able to head over there and check out that information and even pass that along to your church if they'd like to host or facilitate an evening, you know, with my father on this topic. But transitioning to today's episode titled, God Joined You Together, What Does This Mean? I'll turn it over to you, Dad. And as always, if there are things that you want me to read or respond to, I will do so. But I'm excited to kind of hear some of your thoughts on this topic, because I think it's so pertinent to the issue of marriage and coming together, but even staying together.
Well, why don't you begin by reading the first several lines there, quoting what Jesus said in Matthew 19, but then quoting some of the comments that people have made to me over the years based on that.
Matthew 19:6 says, "So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate." And you kind of say here in some of the writing you've done on this, you know, I love the attitude of so many Christ followers. Regardless of the marital bumps, they say things like, quote, "God brought us together, and that is all that matters," or "We know that God brought us together." Somebody else said, "Jerry and I were married just 7 months ago. He is in America and I am in India. We met over the net, and God brought us together in the most wonderful way." And then you ask the question, why do these folks feel this way? Jesus said that we have been joined together by God, referencing Mark 10:9 in this instance.
So you have the question, you know, what does this phrase, God has joined together, what does it mean? I mean, on the one hand, you know, I ask this question, does God intend to direct our steps to one and only one person that he designed from eternity past to be our soulmate? And I say that because, you know, throughout this Western culture, you know, I'm trying to find my soulmate. In fact, people are finding their soulmate by leaving their spouse who found their soulmate. I mean, there's one politician down in South who left his wife and family because he found his true soulmate in another country. And he was a Christ follower, but said, oh, she's my true soulmate. So he leaves his wife. I mean, I think many of us are a bit grieved by that superficiality. And yet I think on a deeper level, all of us long to be in a very meaningful, rich relationship. And we as believers believe, based on what Jesus said, right? God has joined together. So there must be the Lord directing our steps. He's orchestrating all of this to bring me to the person that he wants me to love and respect the rest of my life, to have a meaningful relationship. And I want us to consider Isaac and Rebecca. It's an Old Testament story. Jonathan, would you read, you know, some of my comments there and even read what that text had to say about this?
A graphic illustration of this eventual marriage is seen in the way the angel of God directed Abraham's servant to find a wife for Isaac. Abraham said to his servant, God will send his angel before you, and you will take a wife from my son from there. Genesis 24:7. This is the wonderful story about Rebekah and Isaac. As the servant arrives to the place Abraham sent him, we read of the servant's prayer in Genesis 24:14. Now may it be that the girl to whom I say, please let down your jar so that I may drink, and who answers, drink and I will water your camels also, may she be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this, I will know that you have shown loving kindness to my master.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want me to read more, or is that?
Well, and then I can add, Solomon references, a prudent wife is from the Lord. Proverbs 19:14, a prudent wife is from the Lord. So we know, obviously, God joins us together. You see this prayer of the servant saying, hey, you know, this, show me the one that you've appointed. And so I think many Christ followers look back on how God led them together, and they rejoice and they stand on that conviction. As we quoted several people at the beginning where you highlighted their belief, God joined us together. And I make the point, though, when we read this story of Isaac and Rebecca, we are obviously observing God's gracious direction of the servant to find a wife for Isaac. Isaac was the son of Abraham. God had instructed Abraham that about the nation which eventually became Israel, but that his, you know, generations following would be more numerous than the stars. And so his son Isaac finding a wife to continue on the promise, that obviously historical, was a very important thing to Abraham. So he sends his servant back to his relatives to find a spouse. But the question is, was there one and only one wife for Isaac? And I want to challenge us to be very guarded in saying yes to that. See, because the Lord led the servant to Rebekah, we need to remember that he was told, that servant was told by Abraham, not to go among the Canaanites, but he was to go among Abraham's relatives. And he was instructed, quote, you will take a wife for my son from there. In other words, that there is those relatives. What's interesting, the servant knew he was to go to those who believed in Yahweh, the God of Israel. And once in that environment, the Lord would direct him to a wife. I mean, there would be this at least faith connection, though it wasn't as sophisticated as we now understand it. Now, yes, we only marry one person. Let me be very clear. We only marry one person. And certainly we see the history in the Old Testament of polygamy and all the downside to that.
Well, I was going to ask you that because you said, but was there one and only one wife for Isaac? That's not what you meant by that question.
Well, what I'm meaning is that we understand Jesus said from the beginning, have you not read, you made them from the beginning, made them male and female, and that together, husband and wife. And we have clear teaching in the Old Testament. The king was not to have multiple wives. David and the other kings were told very clearly, you're not to have multiple wives. Even though we saw it, even though it's there, it is not God's intent. People disobeyed on that front with regard to polygamy. But I'm taking the Christ perspective here that, And those of us who are listening, and we have people out there, you know, we're not into polygamy, but we're trying to find that one quote soulmate. And I'm making the point, we only marry one person, but this is the point I want to make. And once we go through that door, once that marriage has been consummated, we've set our vow and there's sexual union, that door shuts. That marriage is now permanent. And Jesus was very clear with his disciples. And that idea of permanence is there. The vow, the covenant has been made. So when two people make a marital vow at the altar and consummate the marriage in the wedding bed, at that point, and this is very critical here, at that point, God joins them together. That's the idea of being joined together. Something happens in the heavenlies whereby this man and woman are seen by God as a husband and wife, and they've entered the holy state of matrimony. This is why the Apostle Paul said in Romans 7:2, the married woman is bound. In other words, joined together. That's what it means. By law to her husband while he is living. And this is why the writer Hebrews said, marriage is to be held in honor among all, that we have been joined together now in that sense, in the eyes of God, we are husband and wife. And that's where we need to understand then, prior to the marriage, in the early dating, let's say, in our culture, there are many doors from which we can choose a person. In other words, if you envision the, each door being a possible mate, there are any number of people that we could, in fact, marry. Now, at first glance or first hearing, that sounds like heresy, but it's really not, and I'll point that out in just a moment. And earlier, even Abraham had been clear that if the woman, and he said this very clear to the servant, if she refuses to return to my home, to come with you back to where I am and Isaac is, then he said to the servant who had made a vow to find a wife, he said, you're no longer under that vow. You're free from that obligation. If this woman that you are led to decides that she doesn't want to come, all bets are off. You're free to go and don't worry about it. It's rendered void. That clearly means then that Abraham entertained the idea that this might not work out, even though the angel of the Lord directed the servant's steps to a girl. In other words, if it did not work out, I infer that Abraham would approach this situation again in another time. I believe he would have orchestrated as best he could finding a wife for Isaac at some future juncture. If Rebecca, in this case, chose not to come, he would just run at this again. He'd look at another door. I infer that. I believe that's what's being said. I don't think he would have concluded, well, if a woman doesn't return, well, I guess Isaac isn't going to get married, and I guess all promises that God made to us are not going to come to pass. I don't believe that. I do believe that, and this is where the application comes in, let's take a Christian, a godly wise Christian man, can experience God's leading to date a girl on a Christian college campus, let's say. And as they date, he shares that God has called him to the mission field in Africa for medical missions. As the relationship continues, the girl says, you know, I really don't believe that I want to go to Africa. Though this fellow is heartbroken, he need not fear that his quote, quote, potential soulmate here that he thought was the one, because she's refused him, now he's going to have to settle for second best, or marry someone who isn't God's will for him, since it appears the Lord directed his steps to this first girl, but now she doesn't want to go to Africa. I guess he's got a real problem, because if God only intends for him to marry one and only one, and that one and only one that he thought now doesn't want to be married to him, he's up a creek without a paddle. And it's this kind of thing that I want to challenge us to think through. He still has plenty of opportunity to marry a person, because it's not like God is saying, hey, there's only one and that's it. It's not that after the marriage, you can have other people. After the marriage, it's a done deal in that sense, in a negative way. But God is saying, no, you are now one. It's to be permanent. But there's a tremendous amount of freedom on the front end of this. And here's the basis of that thinking. There were those in Corinth who were married, but then they lost a spouse due to death. And apparently the widows and widowers were asking Paul, hey, can I remarry, you know? And Paul says something in 1 Corinthians 7:39 that is extremely liberating. Jonathan, do you have that in front of you? Can you read that 1 Corinthians 7:39 passage? Do you see it there?
Yep. It says, a wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband is dead, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord.
Wow. So here again, you have bound. A wife is joined together. In other words, she is bound. That's what it means. as long as her husband lives. Well, that's practical, you know, common sense. Yeah, I mean, I'm married to him. He's my husband. I'm his wife. We are in this relationship. We've made a covenant to God. So it's permanent. But then it says, if her husband is dead, she is free. Oh boy, this is exciting. She is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. The caveat there is that he too must be a Christ follower. But that phrase, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, this is replete with significance. There are many doors in front of her. She is free to go through the door that she wishes to go through. There is a liberty here to assess the situation and evaluate the different men. She is free. And that's what I want everybody to understand. It's tremendously liberating because I think some people get so tight. Oh, I've got to find my soulmate. I got to find this one. And I'm going to make some comments here in a moment that are so free and liberating. But again, the criteria is in the Lord. That would be the one condition that has to be fulfilled, just as Isaac was not to marry someone from the Canaanite countries and cultures. So once in the relationship, she is free to back out of it if the conditions that she has, let's say, for the future with this guy, you know, are not in keeping with her desires. For instance, if she wishes to stay in the city where she lives to care for her aged parents, but the guy that she's in love with, or so she thinks, her quote-unquote soulmate, intends to move to Europe, hey, you know, she is free to say, you know, I don't think this is God's will for me. I'm going to say no to this relationship. And as she says goodbye to him as he gets on the airplane and heads to Europe, she mustn't feel like, you know what, I'm saying goodbye to my soulmate. There is no one else because I only have one and only, and I think I've shut the door on the one and only. That's just not biblically true. If she were a widow, Paul would say, no. You're free to marry whom you wish as long as in the Lord. Relax here. Relax. So far, Jonathan, am I making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm following.
And let me just insert, you know, sometimes you think, well, why would God lead me to date this person if he didn't intend for me to marry this person? Well, I mean, come on. Everything we go through is designed to help us mature. And sometimes God leads us to A, to get us to B, in order to get us to C. But I'm not going to try to unpack the wisdom and sovereignty of God on this. I'm simply going to say, let's not have this mindset that there's one and only one, and if that person gets on the place to go to Europe, or if she doesn't want to go to Africa with me, boy, I'm up a creek without a paddle. So this is why we need to remove the soulmate idea from the marital radar screen, because it distracts people from three things that I want to say at this point. In fact, Jonathan, I want you to read these if you would. The first thing I want us to hear about this is this.
First, the focus needs to be on being the right, mature person. This is huge. Some look for the perfect person while they themselves have glaring imperfections but refuse to do an honest assessment of themselves. They never ask, why would a perfect person marry someone as imperfect as me? But the soulmate idea makes it easy. This is about God gifting me with a wonderful person regardless of who I am.
And that's what the soulmate thinks. Hey, you know, look, if I get a soulmate, this is going to really be easy. And it's really about me finding the right person. And I continue to challenge those who are in this pre-married state. Look, as tough as this is for you to hear, this is not about you finding the right person. This is about you being the right person. And this idea of the soulmate keeps you looking around for that perfect person out there. And then I always get a chuckle when I address this. I mean, if you find the perfect person, why in the world would they want to marry you? I mean, come on, this is presumption. But the liberating thing here is before Christ, those who are very genuine, humble, look, just be restful. The issue here is for you to work on yourself and you be that right person and you're going to touch the heart of Christ. You're going to bring pleasure to the Lord. So relax. First and foremost, seek to be the right person. Second, Jonathan, you want to read that paragraph?
Secondly, the focus needs to be on finding a mature, godly person. Attention needs to be on their character qualities, not on coincidental circumstances that make it appear as though heaven has orchestrated this match. When we let our goosebumps govern our decision, we stop paying attention to the moral fiber of the other person. We let down our guard. Surely this person is great since the stars have aligned themselves to make this happen. That's utterly foolish, but love at first sight proves to be the world's greatest time
saver.
In terms of, I guess, what did you mean by that? In terms of,
well, you know, taste, it's
flavor.
Yeah. Well, you know, I meant savor. I misspelled that, and you, I confused you on that. I realized I misspelled it. Savor, time saver. It's the idea. Hey, love at first sight. I don't have to spend any time on this. I mean, this is really convenient. And I go on to say, one need not struggle with figuring out if this supposed soulmate is a pure soul and knows even how to be a mate. I mean, so again, the challenge is once I begin to really look at myself and study myself, now, secondly, begin to look at the people around you, but don't look at these goosebump, circumstantial, heavenly orchestrated things. Oh, you know, we were, the song that I loved was the song that they loved, and we came through the door at the same time. And Pastor, what does it mean that we came through the door at the same time and that song that we both found as our favorite song was being played? I said, well, you went through the door at the same time and the song happened to be the one that you both favored. I mean, that's all it means. I want you to look at who in the world is that person in his heart? Who is she in her soul? Evaluate the maturity of this individual. Don't be looking at these circumstances that give you goosebumps. I mean, the lack of maturity here, we don't buy cars that way. We don't choose a school based on that. I mean, we are so thoughtful on so many fronts, except sometimes when it comes to these issues of intimacy and romance. Am I being too tough on everybody who's listening, Johnny? I mean, Jonathan? Johnny's the nickname.
Maybe a little bit, but I hear you,
okay,
you know, loud and clear. I mean, in a little bit in the sense that these are difficult things to you know, navigate and simplify on another level, right? I mean, the wonderful side to romance and falling in love is the feelings and looking for the coincidences and finding these things that, you know, we derive meaning for. Now, yes, there's a great immaturity on it, but, you know, on the other side of it, it's what makes the process so exciting, you know, as well, right? And so I, you know, the question is, did God intend for all those things to happen?
Well, and I think it comes back to the Rebecca Isaac and the servant. You know, Lord, now I'm looking at this woman here, tell her to ask me for a drink. And so I do not want to minimize the fact that the Lord does in fact guide us. And I'm going to make a point in conclusion about this, but who are the people who is going to experience that subjective element? Who is the person that's going to experience those circumstances come together? Because I'm not denying that they do. But I am going to say, if you are focused on being a mature person, if you're focused on being the right person, if you're focused on finding a mature person and you're not always looking for these easy kinds of things, then in those instances, you're going to begin to see, I believe, these precious circumstances, not unlike the servant of Abraham experienced. But many of us get ahead of ourselves. We're immature. The other person's immature. But we're not honest with ourselves about ourselves. We're not honest with ourselves about the other person. And then some coincidence happened because you and I see so many people making decisions about a lifetime commitment based on fluff. There's just no substance there. But we say, well, but that there's such an experience, there's such an infatuation, there's such a sense that this is, we're connected. Yeah, you've known each other for 3 weeks. I have never seen this kind of attitude among people who have been in a relationship 5 years. Or even 2 years. I mean, troubles come, trials come. Each of us have expectations of the other that are at contradiction, and we begin to realize the other's asking me to do something. It comes back to so many things, and we get irritated, we get annoyed, and it's in those moments that the true test, the true character of myself and the other person, you've got to have enough trials so that you truly know yourself and you know the other person. Quite often, these people who are saying, I found my soulmate, have not gone through that. And it's really, I think, sad that many of us look around and we see those people walking hand in hand and arm in arm. And I say, you know, then you get envious of this. And man, I want that kind of relationship. And I say, whoa, 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 whoa. First of all, you need to find out how long they've known each other. Secondly, you need to ask yourself if they've got spouses at home who are crying and the kids are crying because they walked out on their spouses because they've got this hot and heavy thing going on. But yet we look at that and then we feel depressed that we don't have what they have. When you need to realize what they have isn't anything. It's superficial. It's infatuation. It's a chemical thing, but it has no substance. Because the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 7:28, if you marry, you've not sinned, but you will have trouble. There is this daily life, what I call the 80-20 rule. 20% is going to have trouble. And that 20% is going to put us in a situation where we've got to be mature people and be married to a mature person. We might have a daughter that has cancer and is going to die. We might lose our job. There are sufficient things that are going to prevent us from having that Hawaii trip or that cruise experience. And mature people know this. It doesn't mean that God isn't going to direct our steps, because I'm going to talk about a third thing here that really opens up the leading of the Lord in our lives. But if we don't have that in place, we're not going to, I think, experience what we see Rebecca and Isaac and the servant and Abraham experiencing. Read that third one, if you would, Jonathan.
Third one. One must determine if there is a kindred spirit with regard to one's life purpose. The servant needed to determine if Rebecca wished to return with him to Abraham's family. They were to be a part of a mission to which God called them. So too, each person must discern what God's call in his or her life is. Does the other person have that same mission?
I mean, technically, let's take Liberty University, a Christian university. A student could pursue the possibility of marriage with any number of people. There are many doors there, right? Because there are many godly, wise young people there. For this reason, it demands that one think first, what kind of person am I really? I mean, you've got to look at that square on, because the true you will come out at some point during these trials. And so this is a great challenge for us to really think honestly about ourselves, because it will come out. And then secondly, am I trying to find the right person before I really, it's not second, it goes along with that, before I'm really asking, am I the right person? And then secondly, am I looking for circumstances to confirm dating someone, for instance, or am I seeking to discover the character qualities in this other person? Am I looking around at the person more so than looking around at, oh, is there some way that a coincidence can happen to make this really easy? And I say that because every man has his image of Eve, and every woman has her image of Adam. And here's what happens. In those initial encounters, we project onto the other our perfect Eve, our perfect Adam. And if you don't think that is something we don't do, you've got to think again. We have a propensity to project onto the other person our image of the perfect Adam, the perfect Eve. And that's why we end up making many times a superficial assessment, and then why we get so disillusioned when they don't act in accordance with the image that we have of them. It's kind of like, I can't believe you've fallen so short. Well, did they fall short, or you're just now discovering who they truly are? And that's a very important thing for us to be honest about. We must not make a decision based on what we imagine the person to be, but who in fact they are. And that's why family and friends is so important. And that's why when we're dating somebody in isolation, which Joy, my daughter, has preached on this, you cannot have relationships in isolation. But if you fear that your friends and family are not going to approve of this, are they that stupid? Or are you just simply not wanting to face the truth about yourself and face the truth about the other individual? And then the third thing, Jonathan, if you'd read that, this is where I think it gets kind of exciting, and we'll kind of wrap this up.
For instance, if one person is headed to the tribes of New Guinea, whereas the other wishes to be a computer programmer, someone needs to change course, or this relationship is not the door through which one must walk. If one does get married, then the marriage has been established by God, and this couple now must figure out how to bring about God's call in their lives in the face of the fact that there are no computers in New Guinea.
That's right. So here I'm making the point that once you get married, now you're going to have to figure that out. But prior to marriage, you are free to say, you know what? There are no computers in the jungles of New Guinea. And so one of us is either going to have to let go, or we're going to say, you know what? I believe God really wants me to start a computer company. I don't think that's going to happen in New Guinea. Well, the Lord's directing me to New Guinea. It doesn't mean that the other person is bad or ungodly, and it doesn't mean that you couldn't have done life with them. But the life mission issue is critical. If I'm mature, they're mature, but we're not on the same page about what God is asking us to do, that there isn't a sense of a kindred spirit here about his purpose for us, then it's okay to say, you know what? That relationship hasn't worked out. The Lord led us together, but that didn't mean that he intended for us necessarily to marry. It's his way of getting us to the letter C, and we start at the letter A, and we've got to get to C through A and B. And we're discovering more about ourselves. It allows us to grow. This is where we have to be sensitive. In the book of Acts, remember, Agabus binds himself with a belt and says to Paul, if you go to Jerusalem, this is what's going to happen to you. And he thought the Spirit was saying, don't go, Paul. And Paul said, no. The Spirit is right. That's exactly what's going to happen, and the Spirit is letting me know. And I love that story because many of us misinterpret what the Spirit is doing. Just because the Spirit led us to enjoy a relationship with someone of the opposite sex and entertain the idea that maybe we might marry this person, and then as we get into it, we realize we don't have the same life goal, it's okay to go your separate ways without thinking, wow, I thought God wanted me to marry that person, and now it's not, so either God lied to me or I'm not hearing from God. Whoa. Don't put that kind of pressure on yourself. Be more relaxed in this. You're free to kind of look at this person. You're free to look at that person. You're not free after you marry. That's when God has joined you together. The door is closed. There are no more doors. It's done in that sense, but it's also now we get on with God's mission together. But that's why Proverbs 18:22 says, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. In other words, in this case, it's a husband's responsibility to find the kind of wife that God intends for him to marry. And that's why I'm very concerned when we have this soulmate idea that because if you have that, then we think it's going to be 99% fulfilling, it's going to always be romantic, it's always going to be blissful, it's always going to be easy. But that runs contrary to 1 Corinthians 7:28 that says, when we marry, you know, we've not sinned, but we will have trouble. And there isn't going to be absolute marital bliss. Instead, there's going to be marital blisters at times. And we've got to understand that as mature people. And I'm very concerned about this soulmate idea because at the end of the day, it's just about infatuation. But I will say this. You will experience what Rebecca experienced, what Isaac experienced, what the servant experienced, what Abraham experienced, if you say, you know what, I'm committed to becoming this personally mature person in a marriage, and I'm committed to trying to find a person who is truly mature, and I'm committed for the two of us to have a sense of our life mission together. And if all three of those are converging, I believe you're going to see God lead you in those circumstantial ways. But it's not because you're looking for this, you know, the stars to align themselves and getting goosebumps. More, it's this mature view, you know what, God is really in this. And we will look back when we have these moments of difficulty. No, God has joined us together. And we're going to continue to work through these troubles, these challenges, the things that we're experiencing, because we know that God joined us together.
Well, I certainly hope people enjoyed this. I know I have a number of questions that could be asked, but due to time's sake, I won't ask them today. I almost kind of wonder if there's a part, two in here, someday, as I think a lot of it kind of was this idea of what preceded, getting married, or what precedes, people getting married. And I know that was coming to, mind for me, this idea of, what if I joined us together and God didn't, join us together? What if I was, disobeying, then in some way, and, what if this idea, of, my feelings are directing me outside of our, relationship now, and I didn't make the correct decision initially. And so again, we could go, on and on. I know you've heard all these questions from a variety of places, but I know those are the things that were kind of coming up with in me and then a number of other issues. So,
We have this family growing of our podcast. We need to come up with some kind of the Love and Respect family of podcastees. Is that a word? But let's get the dialogue going. You all can write us. Jonathan just presented a whole set of questions that are excellent. And that idea, what if I force this? And now, did God really want me, and what about the feelings and so on and so forth? So let's put it back to the podcastees and say, hey, what questions are arising? And I will address it. We'll address it together because it's a huge issue. And I don't want the discussion to stop after one podcast.
Well, certainly we're willing to do that in the future. And I think you enjoy doing that with kind of more in-depth analysis on a topic. But again, we appreciate you joining with us this week. We always appreciate the ratings and the comments on iTunes and other places that help us gain traction. We're so grateful to those of you that have done it. Appreciate you sharing this with others, and hope you all have a wonderful rest of your week. Take care.
You've been listening to the Love and Respect podcast. For more information and additional products,
go to loveandrespect.com
and follow us on Twitter,
Facebook,
and Instagram. Join Emerson and Jonathan next week for another episode.